Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Today, I'd like to announce that we have an event coming up to have everybody in the nation talking about what we're talking about. And one of the things we've been hearing is that it's not the time yet to talk about gun control. And we respect that. We've lost 17 lives, and our community took 17 bullets to the heart. And it's difficult to come back from that. So here's the time that we're going to talk about gun control. March 24th, we have the March for Our Lives, which you can find at marchforourlives.com, and expect to see us a lot. The March for Our Lives is going to be in every major city, and we are organizing it so students everywhere can beg for our lives. Because at the end of the day, this isn't about the red and blue, the GOP and the Democrats. This is about adults and kids. And at this point, you're either with us or against us. We are giving all our politicians a clean slate, and in the next election, we are saying, if you are accepting money from the NRA, there is a badge of shame on you, because you are enabling things like this to happen.
Well, that's the voice of Cameron Caskey, and that was that that appearance on Fox News Sunday yesterday that we just played, and that's just a portion of it. If you're not with us, you're against us. If you are not with us in reducing guns, you are against all students, all teenagers, and you actually want us to be killed. That's the inference there. And so I've already made my comments about that, but I want our guest to comment on this as well, because John Lott really spends his time studying the effects of guns on crime, how to prevent it. He is the founder of crimeresearch.org, crimepreventionresearch.org, by the way. And John is a professor that I've known a number of years, who I always have to introduce him this way, because I know personally that because of his strong position on what's happened with guns throughout the world, the statistics that he's gathered, and by the way, he is a statistician, he got himself in a lot of controversy as an academic, and now really has devoted his life to covering this very controversial subject. He's written numerous articles, numbers of books. More Guns, Less Crime comes to mind. That's one of the best ones that he's written. He's written many. And he joins us this morning to just kind of comment on this latest shooting in Florida. John, thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having me on.
All right, John, I don't know if you saw that appearance by those kids yesterday, but you at least heard that clip. I just want to know what you think about those kids saying those things.
Well, I mean, I guess the problem that I have generally and what I find so incredibly frustrating is that the different types of proposals that gun control groups are putting forward wouldn't have stopped this attack. They wouldn't have, you know, you look at the number one type of proposal that's been put out for years now by gun control advocates, the so-called background checks on private transfers, you know, universal checks. We had people within a couple hours of the attack on last week that were calling for it, and yet it wouldn't have stopped that attack. It wouldn't have stopped a single mass public shooting during this entire century. You had people like Senator Nelson on the TV within a short period of time, just hours, calling for banning gun purchases by people on terror watch lists. Well, again, there's not one mass public shooting that would have been stopped by that, but even then he mischaracterized the whole debate, because the difference between the Republicans and Democrats was over whether or not you should have judicial review. The Democrats just wanted to have some unnamed bureaucrat in Washington or someplace be able to put people's names on the list. And the Republicans' proposal was that, well, fine, they can put the names on the list, but if somebody's being prevented from being able to go and defend themselves, then the government has to meet some low standard of evidence, probable cause, to be able to justify that, and they have to, which basically means something like they're like 20% sure that the person could be a danger to others. You know, it's not like preponderance of the evidence, which is 50%, or beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the criminal standard that's there, where you're virtually certain about what's going on. But you know, just probable cause, and the Democrats didn't want a judicial review. But here's the problem. they go through all these things that they want to have that don't work, and yet the one thing that we know will work, they won't even talk about. We can't even get a serious discussion about, and that is these gun-free zones. The attack last week was again another attack where guns were banned. And at some point, people have to realize that if you look at the statements that these killers make, if you look at just the statistical evidence that, you know, 98%, over 98% of these mass public shootings since 1950 have taken place in those areas where people aren't allowed to defend themselves. All the mass public shootings in Florida have taken place where people aren't allowed to defend themselves. At some point, people have to realize that these aren't random. I mean, these killers may be mentally ill in some way, but they are not stupid. They want to kill as many people as possible or maim as many people as possible. And they know that if they go to a place where nobody has a gun, if people can't defend themselves, they're going to be able to kill more people. And, you know, people talk about putting armed guards, police officers at these places. I don't think people understand the difficult job that having somebody in uniform faces, basically an impossible job. Because what happens is that you put somebody in uniform in a place, put one man in uniform or one person in uniform, it's like putting a sign on them, a neon sign that says, shoot me first. And the benefit of having a concealed carry with staff or teachers or others at a school is that the killers don't know who they have to attack first. And that takes away a lot of the strategic advantages that these killers have.
You know, John, did you hear, I just read an article about, you may know about this, Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd from Florida, who is offering a plan that his department has implemented in one, at least at a junior college in his area. He calls it the Sentinel Program. And the idea is this, that you arm teachers with concealed weapons and train them to effectively defend students should the need ever arise. It also talks about how it's extremely vigorous. He only selects teachers with impeccable crime-free backgrounds, and then the teachers undergo rigorous training. Standards beyond what are normally required, and then they subject teachers to intense psychological evaluation, and then they make them, after they make through all of, get through all of this, special deputy sheriffs. What do you think about that plan?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, it gets around to state law by making them deputy sheriffs. I have to say, some of the things seem a little bit overkill in the sense that you have to, I don't know what an extra clean criminal record is. Either it's clean or it's not clean. If it helps sell it, fine to go and say things like that. But I think making people deputy sheriffs is a great idea.
It was interesting to me. I know this is not so such news to you, John, but these, like at this school in Florida, as I understand it, there were two or three armed security guards, but that the building is so vast, there was no way they could get there that quickly, and certainly the police couldn't either, because I think, didn't he kill all of these students within like 3 minutes?
All right, as far as I know, we still don't know what happened to the one armed police officer who was there.
Was there just one? Did I misunderstand that?
Yeah, there was just one.
Okay.
And I heard the sheriff talking about it just a couple days ago, and he was saying they were still investigating where the person was. It's not even clear he was around there. Presumably he was, but, all I can say is, if you look at past mass public shootings where we have somebody on the premises who is there, who can stop the attack, time after time, they're the first people attacked. If you have one of these killers, these killers have a huge strategic advantage by choosing the time and the place of the attack. If there is people there, if there are people there who have guns, they can either not attack there, or they can go and shoot that person first, or they can move on to some other target, or they can wait for those that law enforcement to leave the area. And, you know, there's so many vulnerable targets that are there. It just, you know, over the last week, I don't know how many different theories I've heard about how we want to try to stop these things, you know, having armed guards at each of the doors and having metal detectors and things like that. The point I would make generally is that these people are planning these attacks at least 6 months in advance. That's about the shortest you find. Often it's a year, often it's even more than 2 years. The Sandy Hook killer was apparently spent 2.5 years planning his attack. And so, you know, the notion that if somebody plans the attack that long for a place like a school or a movie theater or a mall or whatever, you can have a really hard time hardening the target enough to prevent those individuals from being able to get through. And, you know, if you have one armed guard at a place, and let's say he's right at the entrance, again, that's a very difficult job. You know, first of all, it's an incredibly boring job. I don't know if you follow the air marshals, but the air marshals have an amazingly high turnover rate. These guys, it's like 50% leave the job after like 4 months or something like that. And the reason is because they're just sitting in a seat. They can't go to sleep. They're not supposed to read anything or have anything else divert their attention, and just sit there for usually just going across the Atlantic back and forth, you know, a six-hour flight or whatever, just sitting in a seat and virtually nothing ever happening is an incredibly boring job. And to have a police officer, let's say at an elementary school or a middle school, how often are they going to actually do anything for those places? And so you have somebody who's there with a metal detector, one guy. Now, maybe you want to have three armed guards or something. But that's going to be, you're talking about real costs there for the 100,000 public schools that are out there to go and guard these things. And what I would point out is the teachers and staff are already there. You know, why not let them do it? Plus, they have the advantage that they're not in uniform. Plus, you don't want, if you're going to have a staff member or a teacher or a few of them having guns, you don't want to publicize who has it. Even if you were to have, you know, this police officer wearing civilian clothes, my guess is the students are going to realize pretty quickly that this person's not a regular staff or a teacher. And so he's going to be outed. You want to have somebody who's going to be there anyway, who has a regular job there, and it'll be difficult for the students who might want to do the attack to figure out who they have to take out first.
You know, John, of course, to you and me, this makes perfect sense, but to like those kids at that vigil who have already been encouraged to start chanting no more guns, who are so frail emotionally and wounded, they're young and impressionable. It's very difficult. I think it's going to be hard to make that case to them. How would you do that? If you had a 17-year-old child, you knew one in that school, would there be any different way that you would present it than you just presented it to me?
Look, the big problem is they're not being presented with these arguments. The only media that I've done is some radio shows and Fox in a debate, but you know, if you look at all the other networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNBC, CNN, MSNBC, they either don't have anybody there, or they have people that I regard as not very smart defending this side. And I think it's a conscious effort for them to have people that are weak in making the presentation. You know, so they call up somebody who wants to be on TV or whatever, and they you know, they have them on. The fact that they don't even have people on a lot of the shows. I mean, I maybe get a call from CNN or something like that, but the producer, all they want to know is what arguments I would raise so that they can go and bring it up to their panel, which is all on one side, and have them poo-poo it without anybody explaining why they're wrong on it.
Yeah, no counter. No counter. John, can you hold on for a second? Because when we come back, I'll certainly want you to finish your thought, but also I want to move to the FBI's dropping the ball on this. That's the kind of putting it mildly. And also what you see coming as a result of this. You know the players, and we've been through this before where the left, you know, starts to complain and demand gun control laws. Also want to talk to you about this notion that there were 18 school shootings so far in 2018, because that's been something repeated over and over again. And also the international response to this has been interesting. So stay tuned. My guest is John Lott. By the way, it's crimeresearch.org for any of John's excellent articles and research on this very issue. Crimeresearch.org. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.